Thank you. Supri Prad Charja Shoka Sri Srimad Desi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Raj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnupad Puraman Supri Prad Charja Shoka Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Sarshati Goswami Raj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai. Nama Charja Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Rain Sakaho Shikrishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adichaita Gadadhar Shiva Shali Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai Sri Sri Dantha Krishna Gopinath Sham Kumarata Kumigiri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Tham Ki Jai Navadip Tham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Ki Jai Gangamai Ki Jai Jamanamai Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanande. To move up, especially the ladies have to go all the way to the back. Might want to move up. Men too. And the purposes Srila Prabhupada originally gave for ISKCON, one of the purposes was to bring the members of the society closer to Krishna and closer to one another. So this way you're doing both. This is Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 1, text 36. Papameva shreyasman atvaitam atatayanaha tasman narha vayam hantum dhartarastran sabandhavan swajanam hikatam hatva sukhinasyama madhava. Sin will overcome us if we slay such aggressors. Therefore, it is not proper for us to kill the sons of Dhritarashtra and our friends. What should we gain, O Krishna, husband of the goddess of fortune? And how could we be happy by killing our own kinsmen? Purport. According to Vedic injunctions, there are six kinds of aggressors. One, a poison giver. Two, one who sets fire to the house. Three, one who attacks with deadly weapons. Four, one who plunders riches. Five, one who occupies another's land. And six, one who kidnaps a wife. Such aggressors are at once to be killed, and no sin is incurred by killing such aggressors. Such killing of aggressors is quite befitting any ordinary man. But Arjuna was not an ordinary person. He was saintly by character, and therefore he wanted to deal with them in saintliness. This kind of saintliness, however, is not for a Kshatriya. Although a responsible man in the administration of a state is required to be saintly, he should not be cowardly. For example, Lord Ram was so saintly that people even now are anxious to live in the kingdom of Lord Ram, Ram Raja. But Lord Ram never showed any cowardice. Ravana was an aggressor against Ram because Ravana kidnapped Ram's wife, Sita. But But Lord Ram gave him sufficient lessons unparalleled in the history of the world. In Arjuna's case, however, one should consider the special type of aggressors, namely his own grandfather, own teacher, friends, sons, grandsons, etc. Because of them, Arjuna thought he should not take the severe steps necessary against ordinary aggressors. Besides that, saintly persons are advised to forgive. Such injunctions for saintly persons are more important than any political emergency. Arjuna considered that rather than kill his own kinsmen for political reasons, it would be better to forgive them on grounds of religion and saintly behavior. He did not, therefore, consider such killing profitable simply for the matter of temporary bodily happiness. After all, kingdoms and pleasures derived therefrom are not permanent, so why should he risk his life and eternal salvation by killing his own kinsmen? Arjuna's addressing of Krishna as Madhava, or the husband of the goddess of fortune, is also significant in this connection. He wanted to point out to Krishna that as the husband of the goddess of fortune, he should not induce Arjuna to take up a matter which would ultimately bring about misfortune. Krishna, however, never brings misfortune to anyone, to say nothing of his devotees. Om Ajnana Timirantasya Jananjana Shadakaya Chakshurin Miditam Jena Tasmaya Sri Gurave Namaha. We need this to be higher. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tathati Shabalantikam Vandeham Sri Guru, Sri Jatapatakamalan, Sri Gurun Vaishnavanscha, Sri Rupam Shakrajatam, Shahagana Raghunatam, Vitamstam Sadilam, Shadvetam Shavatutam, Purjana Sahitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha Krishna Padam, Shahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitansha. E Krishna Karuna Sindhau Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Gopitrubhyascha Kripa Sindho Vyayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadhar Sri Vashani Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Papa me vashre yasman, advaitan, atatayanaha. Tasman narha vayam hantum tartarastran sabandhavam swajanam hi katam hatva sukina syama madhav. Here in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is presenting to Krishna his unwillingness to fight in the upcoming battle of Kurukshetra. And he gives various reasons, quite noble and befitting of a person of saintly character, so that when we reach the end of the first chapter, we may very well feel that Arjuna's arguments win the day, that his arguments are well-founded and conclusive, and that, in fact, he should not fight. Papa me vashraya dasma hatvaitan adatayana. It will be sinful for us to fight. An intelligent person, a civilized person, wants to act piously or properly according to religious law. He doesn't want to do something sinful by which his reputation will be impaired and by which he'll jeopardize his future. Because one has to know that this one life is not everything. So after this life, there's a future life. And according to my activities in this life, I'll get a suitable result. Even the Christians who don't accept transmigration of the soul accept that after this life, there's either heaven or hell. And those who are pious go to heaven, those who are impious go to hell. Of course, in their view, there's only one shot, one opportunity, and then you're either damned forever or eternally saved. Anyway, we don't have to comment on that, except to say that according to the Bhagavad Gita, there's maybe one life and then the judgment, but then there's another life and again judgment, and again another life, and so on. But whatever view we take, one should act piously, and one should avoid acting sinfully or in such a way that one will be punished by the laws of nature or by God. So Arjuna argues that killing my relatives and friends will be sinful. He accepts that they're atatayana, aggressors. But they're our svajana. They're our relatives. Svajana means our own people. Dhritarashtran, the sons of my uncle Dhritarashtra, Sabandhavan, and our friends. So how can we kill such intimate relations? Svajanam hi katam hatva. And having killed them, sukhina syama madhava, what kind of happiness will we get? So this line of thought by Arjuna is a materialistic calculation. First of all, he's thinking in terms of the bodily conception of life. Svajana, these are my own men. Dhritarashtra, the sons of Dhritarashtra. But on the platform of spiritual realization, no one is my own man, no one is a foreigner. This idea, insiders and outsiders, friends and enemies, citizens and foreigners, is foreign to the soul. For the soul, everyone is related. Not only the human beings, even the animals, even the trees, even the plants, the fish, the birds, they're all svajana. We have a relationship with all of them because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Aham Bija Pradapita Sarva Yoni Shubhanti. I'm the father of all the living beings. Arjuna is related to the Kauravas because they're the sons of his uncle, Dhritarashtra. But all living beings are the sons of Krishna. And therefore we have a relationship with all the living beings. But under the bodily concept of life, Arjuna is divided. Svajana, these are my own people. Because of the bodily relation. Their father is the brother of my father, therefore the relationship is there. This is only in terms of the body. But this bodily concept is so strong that even an advanced member of the Aryan civilization was thinking in terms of the bodily conception of life. This is the power of Maya, or the illusory energy of the Lord, by which I'm thinking, I'm this body, this is my wife, this is my husband, these are my children, these are my parents, my brothers, my sisters. In terms of false identification. And those other people, they're not my relatives, they're not my friends, they're not my countrymen, they're not my community. These people we have to protect, these people we can kill. All in terms of the bodily conception. And Papa Mevashwaye, Arjuna is rationalizing what he wants to do. Sukhinasyama Madhava. His ultimate calculation is what happiness will we get? What happiness will we get? And working backwards from that, he'll devise his arguments of what is proper, what is improper, what is pious, what is sinful. Starting with the bottom line, what will give us happiness? This is rationalization. We come to some idea of what we think will make us happy. And then we work backwards from that about in determining or arguing what's the right thing to do. But it will make me happy, and therefore it's the right thing to do. Or so many things that are obviously wrong, we twist until they look right, or until we can make a case that they're right. Because we think, well, it will make me happy. Any kind of corruption, any kind of bribery, any kind of murder, any kind of violence, any kind of theft, we'll find some argument. Actually, it's good for them. It will help people. It will bring down it will help solve the overpopulation problem. If we kill this child in the womb, it'll help the world. Actually, we don't give a damn about helping the world, but we think, what will make me happy? And then we work back from that to form an argument about what will be good for the world. A child wants to do something. He just wants to do it, that's all. But then his mind starts working. How to argue to his parents that actually it's good. Actually, it'll help me. Actually, it'll be good. I'll learn something. I'll feel better. It'll be more healthy. If I learn by experience, that will be better than... Children are fantastic. They can come up with so many good arguments for what they want to do. And the real argument is, I want to do it, that's all. But for what I want to do, I'll come up with so many reasons. So, sukhinasyama madhava. What happiness will we get? he doesn't take into account how he addresses Krishna as Madhava, husband of the goddess of fortune, implying that what kind of good fortune will I get from this? I want good fortune for myself. What good fortune will there be? That means he's thinking that good fortune is what makes me happy. Everyone thinks good fortune is what makes me happy. If I get an inheritance, that's good fortune. It makes me happy. If whatever may happen, if it makes me happy, that's good fortune. But actual good fortune is to be engaged in the service of Krishna. That we've forgotten. We think that if we're materially prosperous, then we're fortunate. Actually, so often it works the opposite way. The family becomes rich and the children become spoiled. The country becomes rich and the people become degraded. So often. What appears to be good fortune, it will make us happy. We'll have money. Generally, fortune and money are equated. So much so that we say, well, it's worth a fortune. We think, if there's money, there's good fortune. But sometimes it works the other way. Actual good fortune is not material prosperity. From one point of view, material prosperity is misfortune. The more I become prosperous, the more I become wealthy, the more I accumulate material things, house, land, money, prestige, the more I become bewildered, thinking, this is my house, this is my land, this is my money. And here I can enjoy. And one forgets the actual purpose of life. One forgets the actual purpose of life. The actual purpose of life is to get out of this material world. But he's digging into the material world, anchoring himself more and thinking, I'm so fortunate. Srila Prabhupada relates that he was not very happy with the wife that was arranged for him, the wife that he married. So he was thinking of marrying a second time. But his father advised him, if you don't like your wife so much, that's better. If you think she's not so beautiful, and that's good, then you'll always see Krishna as beautiful. We think, if I marry the most beautiful woman, then I'm fortunate. From another point of view, the more beautiful the wife, the greater your misfortune. Misfortune means that I'm thinking that here I'll be happy. In this material world with this material nice wife, nice home, nice bank balance, I'll be happy. Sukhina. Happiness will be there. But that happiness is flickering. That happiness is flickering. It appears for a few moments, a few years, and it disappears. It disappears. It lasts till I'm married and then it disappears. Or it lasts for some years and then it disappears. Or it lasts my whole life. and disappears. In any case, it disappears. Even the happiness of going to the heavenly planets. It stays, it lasts for some time, and then it's gone. Yamimam purkitam vajra pravananti avipaschita. Krishna says those who are childish are interested in heavenly planets and the rewards of svarga, heavenly realms. Pravananti avipaschita. Because that happiness comes and goes. Adyantavanta kantayana teju ramate. It has a beginning, it has an end, and therefore an intelligent person doesn't take its happiness there. He doesn't go chasing after something which will be finished. His happiness, the happiness of the intelligent person, is on the spiritual platform. Materially, things go up and down. When they go down, I'm miserable. When they go up, I'm ecstatic. The people are going up and down with their material happiness and distress. But the self-realized person is always happy. Sukantararam stantarjotiri. His happiness is within. It's not dependent, it's not conditional. Dependent on material circumstances, material things. Arjuna is thinking in terms of happiness and distress in relationship to the body, in relationship to his bodily connections. Therefore he's thinking, what happiness will I get? And he's forgetting Krishna. He's forgetting himself, he's forgetting his spiritual identity, and he's forgetting the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And in that forgetfulness, in that mind, he's thinking so many things. How can I kill these people? He must kill these people. It's his duty. Everyone has a duty to perform for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Spiritually, the duty is prescribed by the spiritual master. Or materially, it's according to the system of occupational duty and social duty, varnashram plan. For a priest to kill is very bad. For a policeman to kill is very good. For a soldier to say, oh, what happiness will I get from killing the enemy, is stupid. Why are you a soldier if you don't want to fight? If you want to be nonviolent, you should have gone into the priesthood. Not into the military. And if you're a priest and you want to kill people, you should have gone into the military. There's some prescribed to what's pious and what's sinful is different for everyone. For the priest to be violent is sinful. For the soldier to be nonviolent is sinful. When innocent people are being attacked, and property is being stolen, and violence is being committed, for him to say, oh, how can I fight? Is dereliction of duty. Even if it's your friends who are setting fire to someone's house, even if it's your friends who are breaking the law, you must fight. You can't say, oh, how will I be happy if I kill my friends? You have to fight. It's your duty. You can't think, friends, enemies, what is my duty? And Arjuna is ready to desert his duty, to flee the battlefield on the consideration, these are my friends, these are my family members. Krishna will argue that you're saying sin will overcome us by killing these people. No, sin will overcome you by not killing these people. Because you'll be neglecting your duty for the sake of bodily concern, prejudice. These people are my friends, family members. How can I care? Single over there. How will you be happy? How will you be happy by fleeing the battlefield? How will you be happy by abandoning your duty? What will happen even to your reputation? The coward of the battle of Kurukshetra. Will that make you happy? Even materially, Arjuna is, despite all the high words, despite all the noble arguments, even materially, he's bewildered. But the ultimate focus of his bewilderment is that he's forgetting Krishna and he's forgetting his own spiritual identity and his relationship with Krishna. Wherever there's Krishna and Arjuna in their relationship of devotional service, there's all good fortune. Tatrashir vijayo bhutir dhruva nitir matir. But as soon as, or anyone, any one of us, as soon as we're in relationship with Krishna, all good fortune is there. Whether we're materially unfortunate or materially fortunate, we're always fortunate when we're at the lotus feet of Krishna. We may win a great fortune or lose everything. As long as we're connected with Krishna, we're fortunate. And when we forget Krishna, then good fortune or bad, it's all bad. It's all bad. Even good fortune will be misfortune when we forget Krishna. And even misfortune will be good fortune. The Pandavas were exiled. They were attacked and threatened in so many ways, but they were always fortunate because they were always together with Krishna. And Dhritarashtra and company occupying the palace and the throne were unfortunate because they were neglecting their relationship with Krishna. So, Arjuna, the Bhagavad Gita will be spoken in such a way that Arjuna will finally come to his senses. He'll engage his senses in the service of the master of the senses, Krishna. Therefore, he'll become supremely fortunate. That's that example, he says. Kodeshyeh vachanantula. Yes, Krishna, whatever you say, that I'll do. At first, it's Nayotsya, I will not fight. And at the end, whatever you say, I'll do. This is his change of consciousness from the consideration, what will make me happy, what do I want to do, what should I do in terms of my bodily relationships, to the real point, what does Krishna want me to do? What will satisfy Krishna? What will be best in my eternal relationship with Krishna? That we'll find at the end of Bhagavad Gita. And the Bhagavad Gita is spoken to bring us to that same Krishna consciousness. Okay, let's stop here. Thank you very much. Are there some questions? I think I saw some clipboard in around. Do we as devotees have a duty to speak out against abortion, which is the same as animal killing? We're not simply anti-animal killing or anti-abortion. There are people for whom the supreme cause is to stop abortion, or the supreme cause is to bring about the protection of animals. That's not our campaign. Our campaign is that people should revive their Krishna consciousness. By becoming Krishna conscious, automatically they'll shun abortion. Automatically they'll find animal killing abhorrent. In relationship to Krishna consciousness, we must speak out. People are acting sinfully out of ignorance. Well, who knows whether it's a living being or not a living being, or it's not a living being. That's their gross ignorance. And by acting in that gross ignorance, they're killing themselves, killing their spiritual realization, killing their future, killing themselves. By killing animals, by killing the child within the womb. So our duty is to give knowledge. Not simply to campaign against abortion, not simply to campaign for animal rights, but to give the basis for all of these things. Sometimes you find people are totally into vegetarianism, totally against animal killing, but when it comes down to an ultimate philosophical basis for that, they don't have one. It's a kind of sentiment. It's a kind of feeling that it's terrible. And that's nice. It's a very good sentiment that killing animals is bad. But they don't have a philosophical basis. If somebody says, well, what's the difference between killing an animal and killing a turnip? It's killing. They don't really have a good answer. Well, the animal has a more developed nervous system. Then you can kill stupid people because they have less developed nervous system. So, for those who are in favor of these or advocating these sinful activities, we're trying to give knowledge to save them from that, from their gross sinful behavior. But even for those who are trying to combat such sinful activities, we're trying to give knowledge by which to make a sensible platform for these things. Or to give them a consistent platform, because they're against, they're in favor of kindness to animals, but they're also in favor of abortion. Or they're against abortion, but they're in favor of something else, which is meant for forgetfulness of Krishna, forgetfulness of spiritual life. They're inconsistent. So, therefore, it is our duty, but not simply to join the campaign for this or that, but to help those who are on the campaign to have a higher understanding, or those who are on the other side of the campaign. Is being more concerned for our immediate family or friends rather than anyone else symptomatic of the bodily concept of conception, although seemingly natural for a person? Yes. It's natural. In this material world, this is my friend, this is my brother, and to think in those terms is completely natural. But our presence in this material world is completely unnatural. My being in this body is unnatural. I'm not this body, but I'm thinking that I'm this body, and in relationship to the body, this is natural, this is natural, this is natural, this is natural. Even all the sinful things people do, so often it's justified, but it's natural. It's natural. People who argue, you know, so having sex like cats and dogs, it's natural. The cats are natural, the dogs are natural. We're doing the same thing, it's also natural. For thieves, stealing comes naturally. So, yes, although It feels natural, it seems natural, but it is natural in terms of this bodily identity, but in terms of our spiritual identity, it's totally unnatural. I'm in an unnatural situation. Embodied life is unnatural for the spirit soul. How can one get freed from this type of bodily attachment, yet be properly situated in one's family responsibilities? By thinking of Krishna and seeing everything in relationship to Krishna. The materialist thinks in terms of bodily attachment. This is my wife, this is my husband, these are my children. I love my this, I love my that. I'll get happiness from the children, from the wife, from the husband, from this, from that. Even now in the modern way of life, especially in America and Europe and so on, the children, once they're 18, 20, they move away from home. They want their own life. And their parents, you know, it was nice to know you. They may keep a connection depending on how they feel. They may keep some connection with their parents. They may more or less forget them. They may feel, no, I have to take care of my parents and see that they have what they need, that in their old age they're in a proper institution. But there's... we don't really want to be with them because it gets in the way of our sense gratification. But it gets in the way of sense to have these old people hanging around. You know, we're young and vibrant and fresh and full of vitality, and to have these old people in the house is like a drag. Even to have to look at them and be reminded of what it's like to fall apart. It's so unpleasant. And what to speak of all the actual work that may be involved in seeing to their needs. So we just sort of skip out. Or if we're able to, so that we'll feel responsible, we spend some money and we have them taken care of. But it's in terms of my sense gratification. What will make me happy? All that family affection. Take a look at affectionate brothers and sisters at the time that the parents die and the inheritance comes. Where the affectionate relationship is negotiated by the attorneys to each side. Ruthlessly, where they fight like cats and dogs over every stick of furniture. Not very literally. I mean, I'm not just speaking, not just talking here, but literally people will fight like cats and dogs, the same people who were so affectionate to one another, once sense gratification comes to the fore. All that bodily relationship, well, that's secondary. As long as it is conducive to my sense gratification, to have a brother, to have a sister, then. But once each brother or each sister represents a diminution of my share, well, now we're talking serious stuff here. But in Krishna consciousness, one thinks that my duty is to Krishna, my happiness is with Krishna, and in relationship to Krishna and Krishna's service, I have some duties toward my family members, toward my friends, toward my husband, my wife, my children, my parents. In relationship to Krishna, my business is not to be here and enjoy how my house is nice, how my children are cute, how my husband or my wife is so affectionate, how my money is increasing, how the yard looks so nice, how we just got a second car, when everyone around us has only one. That's not where our happiness is. Or that's where our happiness is. We're headed for disappointment. Real happiness is in serving Krishna and in relationship to Krishna. Then I may perform all of my duties. And then the natural lines up with the natural. All right, I have a natural affection for my family members, and it's my duty to serve Krishna in family life. So the two go parallel. That's fine. But although the two are going parallel, I should remember which is the primary relation. Just we were discussing earlier today about the retired life. And after retired life, there's renounced life, sannyas. Sannyas is not happy from one point of view. I love my wife so much, and now I have to leave home. My children are so affectionate. Daddy, daddy. And now I have to leave home. But for the service of Krishna, although it may be comfortable, although it may be pleasing to stay at home, no, I have to leave. It's my duty. Just as it's my duty in householder life to take care of my wife, to take, even if I may not like it, even if I don't like her. Even if I don't like them, no, it's my duty, I have to do it. If I like her, that's nice. If I don't like her, well, still I have to do it. And similarly, whether I like my family, I don't like my family, at a certain point, I have to leave. That's another duty. So when it runs parallel, that's nice. When it runs at opposite angles, then I have to consider. No, Krishna's my first duty, service of Krishna. My real duty is what will satisfy Krishna, or what I'm obliged to do for the service of Krishna. That's the high, just a judge. He has to pronounce a sentence against a friend, against a family, because he has a higher duty. His duty to the state comes first, and then his duty to his friends is secondary. Arjuna, naturally, it's good if he can be friendly with his friends, brotherly with his brothers, but when there's a higher duty, then the service to Krishna comes first. The service to spiritual principles, religious principles, comes first. Then friendship, if it goes, even if he has to oppose his friends. And his friends knew that also. Bhishma Dev knew that I have to oppose my favorite students. It's my duty as a Kshatriya. So Krishna first, and in relationship to Krishna, then everything else. And in that connection, the devotee is the most responsible. Because it's not just based on what's pleasing to his senses, which may be one thing today and another thing tomorrow. Now I'm very, very attentive to my wife and family because my wife is young and beautiful. And when she's old and not so beautiful, well, how long do I have to be married here anyway? And he goes looking for a new cookie. Because it's all on the basis of sense gratification. So Krishna consciousness is not on the basis of sense gratification. Therefore, it's more stable, more reasonable, more responsible. If it's my duty, I must do it. I like it, I don't like it. It's my duty. And for the service of Krishna, I'll do it. Yes. What is the meaning of the name Kartik? Huh, Kartik? Like Ram is the one that rebels within? Okay, Ram is the one that rebels within. Kartik. tell you the truth, I never looked at the word in terms of its grammatical meaning. Kartikeya, the son of Shiva and Parvati, but I've never looked at the dictionary meaning. Can't tell you. Sorry. Look at the dictionary later, that will help you. Anyway, the real meaning of the name Kartikeya is servant of Krishna. Everyone is a servant of Krishna. Ekale Ishwara Krishna or Sampit. South Africa is on the verge of staging the latest, the largest spectacle the world has ever experienced, the FIFA World Cup. How can we use this huge material event to benefit spiritually? Well, what we're thinking about is how to use this event to distribute thousands and thousands and thousands of copies of spiritual books. That will benefit us spiritually and will benefit others spiritually. The best way to benefit spiritually is to distribute benefit, spiritual benefit to others. That's the law of spiritual benefit. The more you do for the benefit of others in Krishna consciousness, the more your own spiritual benefit increases. So we're especially interested in thousands and thousands and thousands and billions of fools will converge on South Africa to watch people kicking a ball around. And that will, for that, they'll cheer and they'll boo and they'll, while they're at it, consume enormous quantities of beer and waste their human form of life. After millions and millions of lifetimes, they've got this human form of life with only very short duration. And they can afford to waste their time drinking beer, cheering over people kicking a ball around, watching it replayed in slow motion, talking about it for months before, talking about it for months afterwards, and for completely forgetting who they are and what the purpose of their life is. So for such persons, this Vedic literature is crucial. This Bhagavad Gita is crucial to give them spiritual knowledge, to save them from completely wasting their human form of life, which they've gotten after so many lifetimes, and which they stand to lose and not regain again for who knows how long. So it's a great opportunity for us that so many people are coming to where we're sitting. And we can approach them with transcendental literature and give them an opportunity for spiritual realization. From that point of view, we're looking forward to this useless event. Okay. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. All praise.